This election night, C-SPAN delivers something different. Not just the presidential race, but the state races that will decide the balance of power in Congress. Follow C-SPAN Tuesday, November 5th on TV, online, or on the free C-SPAN Now video app.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Roe McDermott, movies editor from Hot Press, is with us. Let's start with small things like these. An enormous amount of anticipation for this movie starring Cillian Murphy, Eileen Walsh and Emily Watson. Does it live up to the expectations?
Yeah, I think this is a really, really beautiful movie. It's adapted by Enda Walsh, who people know from Disco Pigs, who has long worked with Cillian Murphy and Eileen Walsh, who star in this beautiful movie, adapted, of course, by Claire Keegan. And it all rests on a line that is uttered by Eileen Walsh, who plays the wife to Bill, played by Cillian Murphy. And she says, to get on in this life, there are things you have to ignore. And that's the underpinning of this movie that is set in 1980s in New Ross, County Wexford, a very, very tiny town. And director Tim Milliance, who is a Belgian director, beautifully directs this, and he kind of follows Cillian Murphy's Bill, who is a quiet, taciturn man but has a lot bubbling under that kind of quiet demeanour, follows him walking and working through this town where there are these tiny terraced houses packed up against each other. Everyone can see what everyone else is doing. You bump into your neighbours every time you open the front door, so there's this sense of surveillance immediately, the sense of observation and people being observed. And Cillian Murphy's Bill is observed. He runs a very successful business. He distributes fuel and coal to the people in the town, including the local Magdalen Laundry, essentially, and the nuns. But he's a little bit of an outlier. His mother was a teenage unwed mother, which should have resulted in her being absolutely stigmatised and could have resulted in her being put in a Magdalen Laundry herself. But she was taken under the wing of a wealthy widower who had a bit of land and was very kind to them. So he was protected and actually lived in proximity to wealth. So it puts him on the outskirts of this town, kind of socially, but he's an incredibly kind man. But that is even treated with suspicion by the people in the town, who are in such survival mode financially, culturally, socially. They're under the thumb of the church. But when he witnesses something terrible happening with the local nuns and a young woman, it really starts off the action and the character drama of this film.
What about the performances? Because this is Cillian Murphy's first movie since winning the Best Oscar for Oppenheimer. This is obviously an utterly different type of role. But I think he said himself this is more about his physical performance, isn't it, rather than a verbal one.
Yeah, but I think that's really interesting about Cillian Murphy, because Cillian Murphy often puts in performances that aren't particularly verbal, that are about quiet characters with so much bubbling underneath. But he always manages to bring a different flavour to those characters. So you have the kind of ordinary resilience of his character in 28 Days Later, for example. You have that intensity and the guilt and that intensity of Oppenheimer, which again was a quiet character, but had a completely different feel to this character, who is riddled with trauma, guilt. He wants to do the right thing constantly. He's very quietly observant. He knows the rules of the world around him, but he also knows how the rules of that world could have meant that his existence and his mother's existence were very, very different. And you can see when he pushes back against these rules that the world kind of closes in around him. Even his wife, who is a good woman, but they're raising five daughters, and she's so aware about the fates of their daughters that they need to be educated, they need to be safe, they need to be secure. And to do that in this society, you have to fall in line. So it's about individual people perpetuating the rules of this society.
Had you read the novella?
I hadn't read the novella, and I've started it since, and I think it seems like a really, really beautifully faithful adaptation. There are, the dialogue in this is incredibly sparse. It's about the feel of it. And then you have a character, Emily Watson, who comes in, who is the mother of the...
Okay, well, let me just actually... We have Enda Walsh was with us earlier in the year during the summer on the Culture Club. And I actually did ask him a question that time about adapting Claire Keegan's Small Things Like These.
Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of hers. I think she's an absolutely extraordinary writer. But also the subject matter, I think to many Irish people will just feel really...
Requires great sensitivity.
Completely. And I mean, but she is the master of tone and getting that right. And it's really, really, it's how she does it with so few words and the right words and whatever. It's just perfect sort of like writing for me. But I must say, I mean, the guys who made it and Cillian and the performances, I was just so happy when I saw it in Berlin. I was like, oh my God, they've really made something special. And super excited, especially just to as an Irish person, to play it to Irish audiences, for sure.
That was from the Culture Club during the summer. We're actually going to put that Culture Club back up again if people have missed it. And also Eileen Walsh did a terrific Culture Club with us as well previously. Has he succeeded in bringing the book, do you think, with that sensitivity required to the screen?
Absolutely. Because there's so little dialogue, everything becomes more weighted and you really feel that what is being unsaid, particularly in this film. So when Cillian Murphy is warned by the locals to kind of fall in line in quite a gentle way, you can feel the tension bubbling underneath that. When you see Eileen Walsh looking out for her daughters, you can also see the rules she is imposing on other women. And then Emily Watson bursts on screen as Mother Superior in this convent, and she really gets everyone to fall in line just by being assertive, never being explicitly threatening, and actually being incredibly polite. But there's an undercurrent of menace. It's also so beautifully shot. It's set at Christmas time, but there's nothing cozy, there's nothing warm. It's just the undercurrent of the rot that was at the heart of Irish society. Really, really beautifully done.
Recommended viewing. So what about Blitz, starring Saoirse Ronan?
This is Steve McQueen, who people would know from 12 Years a Slave and Hunger, and those obviously were films that had such difficult subject matter. But he's actually quite a classical storyteller. He makes very difficult subject matter very accessible and very polished, almost commercial. And I will say Blitz, which is about an 8-month period starting in September 1940 when London was being bombed, 500,000 children were sent out of London to rural England to protect them from this bombing. So a really dark time in history, and there's a really important element to the story that he's also addressing black characters who, I admit, I have never seen a World War II movie that includes the experiences of black characters, and they center
unless it's sort of American GIs.
Yeah, and this is about George, who's played by Elliot Heffernan, who is the young boy, and he is the young son of Saoirse Ronan, and he is biracial. He experiences a little bit of racist bullying we see at the start, but he's playing on the streets of London where half the buildings are now skeletons and bombed out, but people have to go about life as normal. But when Saoirse Ronan's Rita decides to put him on a train for his own safety, he takes this as the ultimate rejection, of course, as you would as a young child, but jumps off the train en route and tries to get his way back home. And it becomes this kind of odyssey through London during the Blitz. It's quite sentimental, I will say. It's almost a little bit mawkish at times. It becomes very Dickensian. There are gorgeous elements to this. So George encountering black soldiers on his way who teach him to embrace being black. He goes into underground shelters and he sees Jewish people being separated from others, and there are gorgeous speeches about tolerance and the importance of kind of London coming together. But there are also very sentimental qualities to this. He encounters a band of thieves, which should be very grim and is at parts, but it feels lifted completely from Dickens. You have a Fagin character, you have a Bill Sykes character, you have a Nancy character, and there's something about the characterization that falls a little bit flat. There are stunning sequences in this of people gathering together, shying away, capturing moments of joy that were keeping people going, and the resilience of people in London. But there's something about this that is veering a little bit too sentimental. Saoirse Ronan, beautiful as ever, and she's playing this plucky young woman who has been somewhat ostracised by society for being unwed, for having a biracial son, for being with a black man, and she has a resilience to her and a grit to her that is a real joy to see on screen. I think it's a very heartwarming film. It's almost crowd-pleasing, and I almost think the sentimentality detracts from the really important messages that could have done with a bit more complexity and a little bit more darkness, I feel.
Hugh Grant's Heretic, what's this like?
This is a horror movie I saw this morning. I have never seen Hugh Grant having so much fun in my life, and that's because he's playing an absolute psychopath.
Well, so, actually, let's hear a clip in which he's visited by two young missionaries played by Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East to discuss Mormon doctrines.
No, you read more than we do. No, seriously, we should be more like you, Mr. Reed. Mr. Reed.
Pie smells amazing.
And now that you've been studying the Book of Mormon, how does it make you feel?
Can you guess what kind of pie she's making?
Is it blueberry pie?
It is blueberry pie.
My favorite.
Going back, can I ask, how did your father pass away? I'm sorry, I shouldn't
have. Disease?
Blueberry disease. Okay, that's wonderful. Blueberry disease. Who wouldn't want that? Ah.
Lou Gehrig's disease. Gehrig's?
Oh, that's awful. I'm so sorry, I misheard. That is a malicious affliction. I thought you were making a joke about the pie. I'm sorry. Yeah. Have you seen any signs of your father since he passed? Has he tried to communicate from the other side?
No.
That's strange.
What's all that about?
I loved the opening of this movie. I think there are a lot of horror movies that play with religious elements, whether it's religious imagery, it's playing with ideas of religion and the supernatural. And there are a lot of horror films about religious zealots using violence to get this way. But this kind of turns it on its head, and it's more an intellectual film. If you're into a lot of wordy dialogue, if you like debate club in college, this is for you. As you hear, Hugh Grant is a man who two young Mormon missionaries come to his door. He's asked for more information about their church. They come in and instantly it's a game of discomfort. They say, we need a female chaperone in the room. He says, yes, my wife is here, of course, but she never materializes. And these two young women, played brilliantly by Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East, don't know how far to push their boundaries. And he kind of takes advantage of that and kind of takes center stage. He's playing this character who almost feels like he wants to be a cool professor. He wants to engage with the kids. He wants to have dialogue with them. But as he asks more and more provocative questions about their religion, you realize that they are being tested, and suddenly they realize they are also trapped. And unless they engage with his intellectualism and his logic and play his game, they are not getting out alive. So the film, it talks a lot about religion, and Hugh Grant is having so much fun with this character who is plays with humor. He plays with this idea of, no, you're free to do whatever you please, but they know they won't. And they have these heady debates about religion, about he has an idea of religion coming from the same origin story and is trying to poke holes in their faith while challenging them to keep hold of their belief system. And then everything gets a little bit dark and grimy, and it becomes kind of haunted house story where they're trying to get out of their of this house.
We're seeing
at the moment. It's a mixture of soul and an intellectual debate. It's really, really good fun for the first half. The action kind of lets itself down in the latter half, but Hugh Grant is having so much fun. The dialogue is really fun. It's intellectual. It's gripping. It's engaging. There's a really dark sense of humour. It's entertaining. Not perfect, but I had a lot of fun watching it.
Let's hear a clip from our last movie. Clint Eastwood is still directing movies at the age of what? 95? 89. I thought he was older. Anyway, here is Juror Number 2. This is Justin, played by Nicholas Holt, confiding in his friend and lawyer, played by Kiefer Sutherland.
So I went to clear my head and found myself at Rowdy's Hideaway. Ordered a drink and sat there for a while. Then I got up and left. I went about a quarter of a mile and I hit something. So I got out the car and I looked around. I checked. I didn't see anything, and I figured it was a deer that ran off. And then I got back in the car and went home.
Okay, what's the problem?
I got called for jury duty, the Kendall Carter case. They found her body in a creek bed about a quarter mile from Rowdy's Hideaway last October.
What are you telling me?
Maybe I didn't hit a deer.
So what's all this about?
As you can hear, Nicholas Holt plays a family man, Justin. His wife is expecting. He's going through this big life transformation. He's put on jury duty in Atlanta, and he realizes that he has a very intense connection with the victim at the heart of this case. The man on trial is her ex-boyfriend, believed to have been violent. They believe that they got into a fight and he murdered her, and the evidence seems overwhelming. But Justin realizes, unfortunately, that he is implicated in this, wants to do the right thing, but is racked with guilt, racked with fear over what admitting his involvement could do to him and his family. So it's him deciding, what do I do as a juror? Do I put this man away, protect myself and my family, or do I override this? So it becomes a kind of character drama. And it is a legal thriller as well at its heart. And it has some really interesting ideas about the justice system, how the justice system is politicized, because we have Toni Collette as a prosecutor who is ambitious. She's up for election, and so she really wants to put someone behind bars. You have this idea of people grappling with people's previous actions, and does that mean that they are inherently bad forever? And you have this man who we are rooting for, we empathize with. Is he good or is he terrible? So there are really interesting things. They're incredible actors, Toni Collette, J.K. Simmons, Kiefer Sutherland, but there's so much implausibility in this film that it kind of starts to fall apart. Interesting, but go back to Mystic River if you want to enjoy Clint Eastwood about justice and good and evil.
Thank you very much, Roe McDermott.
The Last Word on Today FM.